Okay. So we're recording now. Can you hear me?
I can hear you. Can you hear me?
Yes.
Okay. Cool.
Okay. So thank you so much for sitting down with me and having a conversation.
Well, thank you for the invitation.
Oh. Well, so for everyone that wonders, I am here with Rebecca Gamier, award-winning essayist, traveler, and professional wanderer. And today we're going to talk about an incredible journey that Rebecca has had and has documented in a blog and will be is a soon-to-be memoir called Chasing Light. Also, full disclosure, Rebecca is my aunt.
Lucky me.
Aww. So I feel lucky on both ways because I get to have a wonderful interview with her, but then I get to talk with her after. So Rebecca, the first question is your blog, Chasing Light, got its name from your extraordinary journey.
Yep.
When you drove across the United States, my first question is, did you start out specifically with the goal to find enlightenment with this journey, or was there some other reason? And then what was the impetus for the journey? What started you on that path?
Yeah, I think to set out and find enlightenment is a loftier goal than I would have been wise enough to think about. The impetus, I'll start with that question, because the impetus was just feeling a lot of darkness in my life. I had lost both parents, and I had worked for 7 years for our county's domestic violence rape crisis agency, which was work I was honored to do and also was just really hard and often disheartening. And then before that, I had served for 14 years as an ordained pastor and just had come to a point where I was really struggling in my own faith. And I just got to a point where I felt like I needed light. And I say that in two different meanings, I guess. I felt heavy and burdened down. All of a sudden I got to the point where I felt like I had too much stuff. And I don't remember if this was before or after Marie Kondo, which was, I mean, I read part of her book and were not practices I could really take to, but also the idea, I do remember just thinking how nice it would be not to be in charge of so much stuff. And so from that standpoint, just feeling like I wanted to be unburdened of a lot, of the weight of a lot of accumulated sadness, of belongings that I really, realized I no longer needed. Things, I don't live like that anymore. You know, things from, I call my other lives, now to be living in rural mountains of North Carolina in a bungalow of about 900 square feet and living alone and thinking I really don't need 12 place settings of china and I don't need all the accoutrements that I had moved from place to place feeling like I had to. And that's one of those points in time, at least for me, where I think, well, now my stuff owns me, right? I'm paying to house it and paying to move it, but I don't really use it and I don't really need it. And maybe somebody else could. So, but also just having this fire lit inside of, I need to just get out of town. I need to just get up and go. So I guess there was an internal restlessness that probably has to do with all the transitions that come from being in my 60s and having parents died and the sort of next phase or stage of my life. So, that was a lot of things pushing me, and also the idea of going west, that idea of adventure and needing to see new things. So the pull. And really all I knew at the time I left was that my life felt heavy and dark and I wanted light. So that's really what I set out to, just discover what I might discover.
Ooh, that is such a beautiful way to start a trip. I guess my next question is, did you have any fear or concerns around traveling?
Constant at the beginning, yeah.
Okay.
Yeah, at the beginning. So I'd done all these things. I really committed. I sort of left before I looked, because I mean, it was that compelling. I rented my house out before I really knew for sure how I was going to travel, what I was going to travel in. I started giving away my stuff. I mean, I was on first name basis with the thrift shops because they'd say, oh, here she comes again, another carload. And honestly, I bet other people will say this too, but once you start that process, it sort of becomes addictive and takes on a life of its own. I mean, I got very aggressive in my giving away. And then after I'd done all those things, then I found the RV that I was looking for. I kind of knew what I was looking for, but had not, you know, over the 6 months or 4 months that I'd been really seriously seeking, I hadn't found, but I finally did find it. And, but all along the way, I kept thinking, you know, there was sort of the heart and the gut movement, and then there was the head. And so the heart and the gut were just full speed ahead. Let's leave tomorrow. And the head was saying, hold on now. You know, are you sure? Do you know what you're doing? Are you making a mistake? You know, that second guessing that I think we all do when those big decisions happen. And so I made some, when I finally moved out of my house and into my 19-foot van with my two big dogs, I stayed for about the first 3 months, I stayed pretty close to home. I camped around our little mountain town, in part to sort of test myself out to see if this wild idea was how I'd romanticized it. And if I'd made a mistake, then I had given myself permission to just sell the vehicle and, you know, figure out the next thing. But I loved it. And I think the first night that I spent in a campground, and I mean, it was remote and I was waiting for Sasquatch to come out of the woods. I was on a little mountaintop in this little campground, and there were maybe two or three other vehicles way far away. And I remember that first night thinking, this is the first time I felt normal, and I can't remember when. Just to sleep in this small little cocooned space, and I don't know, it just felt so freeing. So then I took a couple of short-range trips, like up to see a friend in Indiana and down to see a friend in the Florida Panhandle, just to see what it was like to drive in it and travel in it and get away from the sort of sphere of safety. Because both of my adult kids and my son-in-law all live here, and so it felt like if anything went wrong, they were right here to bail me out. Ha ha, their turn. But I remember when I really set out, like I was leaving everything familiar behind, and it was when I knew I was not coming back. I was heading west, and I wasn't coming back for, you know, the next 8 or 9 months. And that was when I was leaving the Florida Panhandle and heading to Louisiana and then on to Texas. And it just felt like I was crossing this threshold, which I really was, where I was really scared. I remember, you know, driving that day and thinking, can I do this? And so I made a deal with myself that day. Like, you can turn around anytime you want. You know, but what? How about if you just go to this next place? Because, you know, you want to see what's there. And so by the time I'd done that a couple times, I was so hooked on the adventure and just seeing the new things and meeting the new people that I lost that fear pretty quickly.
Well, it sounds like you, just from what you've said so far, it sounds like you were always having a conversation with your head and with your heart and your intuition. And, you know, that the heart intuition part was the one that looked before it left and started renting your house out and started, you know, giving your belongings away. And then your head was the one that said, let's just test this out. And then your heart, your intuition came along and said, okay, we're still going on the adventure. And then your head came back in and said, how about if we just try these other places first?
Yeah.
So did you constantly keep that going? And what did anything change about that conversation as you went on your journey? As you crossed, I guess my question is less about the part that was you crossed many thresholds, but
mm-hmm.
see that one threshold you just mentioned where you actually embarked on a journey without your family close by and, you know, without, you had somewhat of a plan. But what did that conversation change then that you've been having? Did it change at all? You sort of made a bargain, it sounds like, with your head, where you said, at any point we can turn around here.
Right.
You get too scared.
Yeah, if it's too overwhelming.
The heart got mm-hmm. it what it wanted, and the head got it. You know, like, it sounds like you had this constant negotiation, but did anything change?
Yeah, that's a good question, and I don't know if anything changed. I think we got better at conversing. And there were, you know, so there's a difference, I think, between fear and anxiety, and I will say that, you know, there were moments when I had plenty of anxiety along the trip that had to do with what's this next part going to be like that I don't know about. You know, what's the, can I manage this? Can I, you know, like this next part where I'm going, this campground, I've read about it. You know, here are some of the questions people have had, how will I deal with? And so I do think there were times when I can remember my heart, my gut saying to my head, okay, just trust this next part. So, you know, and there was, and people have asked me, you know, if I had bad experiences along the way or if I was afraid for my safety anytime, being a woman traveling alone. And I really wasn't. There was only one time that I left a campground a day early because I felt like there were some people staying, and they were right next to me at the RV park, and this was kind of, it was a small family-owned, and they were drinking a lot and having, the family was fighting with each other, and one of the guys was parading around in a jacket that was the Confederate flag, and I went and talked, because they would wake up early in the morning and start their cursing and their shouting, and you know, having worked at a agency that dealt with domestic violence, I really understood the concept of escalation, and so I felt like this family, that like their arguments were escalating, and there was again a lot of alcohol and a lot of, who knew if they brought guns, right? So I went and talked with the campground, the managers, and they admitted. They said, well, we sort of didn't want to let them stay, but then we relented. And, you know, then, so they were concerned initially, and I said, I'm concerned about the escalation that's happening. And do you even know if they have firearms? Well, then I think after that I became sort of a problem, you know, complainer. Now they were like, well, everybody has a right to be here kind of thing. So I didn't feel safe. My gut told me I didn't like how things were going with that group, and nobody was going to, you know, hold them accountable and or ask them to leave. And so I did. And then there was one other time where I stayed overnight in a Walmart parking lot in Montana, and there were a lot, it was an interesting mix of people that night. But, you know, I did have somebody approach me. It was during the day, and I think they were going to ask for money, but my dogs immediately were kind of on guard, and they barked, and he said, oh, never mind, here's a flower, have a nice day. So that I wasn't, you know, I didn't feel vulnerable or anything afraid of it, because my dogs were right there, and they were like, oh, I don't think so. So that was, you know, I've had people say, did you have a gun? Did you have an air horn? Because I've heard people women travel with air horns. I said, no, but I did have these two big dogs. And there were times if I was staying at a state park campground at night, I had to go to the restroom, I'd take the boys with me. So I felt pretty secure. Oddly enough, I didn't expect that.
Well, so then that's another good question. What else is, what is the most unexpected takeaway, like, or occurrence that happened? I guess before we talk about the takeaway, let's just talk about what was the most unexpected thing that happened. Does anything, you know, stand out?
Gosh, that's
that's something that you said, now that I did not expect.
Yeah, well, I mean, honestly, that happened on about a weekly basis. I really have to think about that.
Well, so maybe what's interesting about your answer is that maybe it's getting comfortable with the unexpected on a weekly basis. You know?
So many of us
get comfortable with our routine and what we do and who we're around. And what you did was you completely upended that. And my question is less, of course, the safety issue is definitely important. But once you put that aside, it sounds like you really took care of yourself with having your dogs there. My next thought is, what happens in that place of freedom, and you know, you could go anywhere you want, like,
yeah,
which is both positive and negative. So I'm sure you had a lot of discovery around that, and maybe you can talk a little bit about what that discovery was like, and maybe we could talk about what you came away with. Now you're, you know, how 2 years or 3 years? Is it 3 years ago?
Two, yeah.
Okay, two years ago.
Yeah.
So 2 years out, you've had some things, you've had some time to, you know, settle and look back, and you've been writing about this experience. You blogged about it throughout the whole process, and that experience is on your Chasing Light blog, right?
Right, right.
Okay, so we'll have a link to that. And it's you're creating a memoir around as well. So I guess without giving too much away.
Yeah.
What is, you know, was there anything surprising about chasing your light? Like, was there anything, you know, you said, first of all, it's not like you embarked and said, I'm going to go chase some light.
And find XYZ, yeah.
At some point you said, oh my gosh, look at this. And I do remember having conversations along the way.
Yeah.
It's almost like a dawn, right? Like the dawn, the sun comes up. It's a gradual realization that's really what you were looking for. Is there anything past that you said, now that you have 2 years on this trip, that you could talk about?
Yeah. Well, so initially I felt in a lot of ways that at the core of this search was this lost faith, you know, to have served for 14 years as a pastor and have lived really in inside faith communities and walked with people and their faith journeys and my own faith journey, to just have to feel like that just disappeared was pretty devastating. And so in there were moments where I thought, you know, I'm seeking the divine again. And it's funny because you talk about the sun rising, but in a way I was heading west toward the sun setting. And there were moments when I thought, I'll just keep chasing the setting sun. Because, you know, the other thing is the fact of aging. And, you know, some people have asked about the book. I say, well, it's a coming of age, but it's a coming of this age. Like, it's me in this next phase, and a lot of us baby boomers, it's like, okay, what's this next part of my life going to look like? I think one of the surprises was, first of all, I didn't know I would take to it so well and that I would love it so much. Like, you know, every time I'd get on the highway and head to the next place, my heart would just soar. Be like, I love this so much. And what a privilege to be able to do it. You know, that was not lost on me for a moment. And that's not to say there weren't times, you know, because I would call you. You were on my, one of about four people I'd rotate around when I was just feeling overwhelmed, when I was tired, because it was fatiguing to do it by myself. And just sort of the mental capacity required of planning for where was I going to go next and how was I going to get there and, you know, all of those things. I did get tired, but to realize that I was chasing my own light, that was a discovery. I might have been around Northern California or Portland when I discovered that. That I thought that, you know, I was chasing this spark of the divine that was ahead of me or someplace I discover. And there were many times when I believe I did step into that place of oh, there you are, there's the spark. But really what I lost was my own light. And not just lost, but maybe given away too much of it, right? Allowed too much of my own light to dissipate. And so I won't give away too much, but there was a real turning point for me in Mount Shasta, California on the summer solstice. So it was another interesting threshold, and I'm writing a new chapter about that right now. So,
well, good. I can't wait to read it, and I can't wait for other people to read it and tell other people about it. So,
thank you.
You know, one thing I want to just recognize you for are the tremendous challenges that you faced along the way. I mean, you not only were you constantly pushing and battling the limits of your RV.
Right.
Road Sinante.
Road Sinante, noble beast.
So you named her, and she did so well for you. And at the same time, it felt to me, because you're right, I was there having conversations with you along the way. I was happy to hear you check in, as were the other people.
You got to travel in her.
And I did. You're right.
Yeah.
You're right. We spent the night. My daughter and I spent the night with Rebecca in
Santa Paula.
Santa Barbara too.
We were in. I don't know if y'all stayed over there.
Yeah,
right.
We spent the night in Santa Barbara. In that smaller one, and then we went to Santa Paula or like Ventura. That really
KOA, right?
Right, and so fun to be a part of that experience. And the nice thing about that was then I was able to really, really imagine, you know, when you talked to me about just your journey, what was going on, but the realities of you pushing your RV to the limits, you encountered all kinds of, you know, natural issues, the wildfires. There were some wildfires up by Yosemite that, you know, ended up, you needed to change your course. I also think there was just heat, right? It was just blazing, you know, over
triple digit.
We'll read about that later. But your journey of pushing up against, testing the limits of, and then moving through these tremendous challenges. First of all, I want to acknowledge you for that, because that in and of itself, I mean, like, you know, there was a journey all along, and then you just add into it the things that just happened along the way, the naturally occurring things. That must have been incredibly challenging, and then now that you're over, you're through that, you're able to look back and see that you accomplished something that took courage and bravery. So what can you say about that? Like, maybe the question is, what advice do you have for people who are facing maybe an unknown, you know, yeah, they set on a course, but they're facing some kind of unknown in their lives, and they have concerns about bumping up against things. You actually not only bumped up against things, found it, and then you managed to get through them. Do you have advice for people?
Yes. No, I think a lot of this journey for me also was I wanted to know what I was made of. And I wanted to know if I could do it. So I think somewhere I knew I was, or I wouldn't have done it, right? So I guess trust that you are stronger than you know, and that you have more resources than you know, that you're resourceful and resilient. And then, you know, a big part of my journey, the challenges, was loneliness. And then the things that I, you know, didn't know how to do by myself. So ask for help. And I, you know, just because I did a solo journey, didn't mean that I couldn't ask for help. You know, there were no rules around that. And so I was grateful for the times when I could pick up the phone and just say, okay, I need you to kind of brainstorm with me, or I have this issue about where I'm going next. What do you think? And, you know, I have one friend I called, and she said, I think I was pretty despairing and feeling fatigued. And she said, honey, you have set up an ambitious pace. And I hadn't even thought about it. I'd been like 3 days here, 2 days there, 3 days here. And I was worn out. And all of a sudden I thought, oh, I can slow down. I can realize I have limitations, right? So I think it's okay to reach out, to ask for help, to say, I don't know how to do this. Can you help me? To say, I need you to listen to me, or I need to just sit with you, or those times when what we're trying feels like we're completely on our own, just to remember there are a whole lot of people with you. You know, I traveled solo, but man, I had a lot of people with me. And that was pretty spectacular and pretty humbling. And also what got me through, it's that reminder that, you know, even that idea of self-made people, everybody has help. We all need it, and it's okay to ask for it and support. And to stay curious, in fact, I just finished reading Elizabeth Gilbert's Big Magic, and I know I'm really late to that party because that book's been out a while. But I really like what she says, and a whole lot of others say this too. But don't let your fear have the last word. I think be reasonable and smart, and then let your curiosity bring you to that next place where you'll discover wonders and new things. And not just in front of you, but also about yourself.
That's beautiful. And you know what came up for me as you were talking is one piece of advice that you have given me in the past, which is when your fear comes up and you start having, you know, doubts, you are famous for saying to me, yes.
Right. Yes.
This has not happened. So you say to yourself, oh my gosh, you know, this isn't happening and this isn't happening. And your addition is, this hasn't happened yet.
Yeah. That was.
Remember that powerful word.
I know. I don't even remember. Someone else gave me that as a gift when I was feeling despairing or like I'd hit, you know, a dead end, and, to always put yet on the end of that, to understand that kind of opens it up again. Oh, the story's not over. Be open. Yeah.
Wow. Well, thank you. I appreciate you sharing, you know, your wisdom about what you gained. Do you have any last, you know, bit of wisdom you'd like to share?
Oh, yes. I think that old saying of life is not a dress rehearsal. This is the real deal right here. This is your life. And if there is some burning thing that you've always wanted to do, and you can figure out how to do it in some fashion, I say do it. I'm so glad. You know, this cost me more money than I wanted it to. I mean, you know, I acknowledge the privilege of being able to do it at all. And also, you know, it's from a fiduciary standpoint, it was not a wise thing to do. And I don't care because I'm so grateful that I was able to do it. And it was life-changing. I knew every once in a while when I would get really tired or I'd, you know, during that triple digit and I'm thinking, shit, I have to deal with all this right now. And then I would also look at myself in the mirror and say, you do remember this is the trip of a lifetime, right? Even with the uncertainties and, you know, the fears and the anxiety created by, yeah, that heat wave was something else, and worrying about my animals and worrying about the vehicle and the time when I lost my brakes on the mountain in California and all of those things, I wouldn't change any of it. And I mean, I have to be honest, you know, a lot of people that I love live right where I'm living right now, including, as I said earlier, my two kids and my son-in-law. And I remember when I started heading back home, and I did not want to come home. I wasn't done yet. I mean, I was just like, I could keep doing this. I just say, if there's that thing that keeps visiting you, pay attention to it and sort of let something unfold that might be your next adventure.
Well, I'm sure you're speaking to more than just one person. And I so appreciate you taking the time to have this conversation.
Well, thank you again.
I can't wait to read your memoir, which will be out sometime soon.
I'm hoping, you know, by next year. So I'm working on the revising my first draft right now, and we'll see what's next. But it's you know, it's so fun to revisit that whole journey, just to say again, what a wonder, and how fortunate I was to be able to do it, and how blessed to meet the people along the way that I did.
Well, thank you so much. I'm going to wrap this up now.
All right.
Hopefully, maybe sometime in the future, you can fill us in with the next installment, you know, the next adventure. So
I know. I feel like there's one brewing.
Oh, yeah.
Yeah. I don't know what it is yet, but I do feel like one's brewing. So.
Okay. All right. I'm going to end this now, end this tape. Okay. Thank you so much, Rebecca Gamier. Until the next time.